skinny, pale, tall, gawky. A bit of a patchwork of personal style. His mother still picks out and buys his clothes, at least whatever he doesn't get as a hand-me-down from his older brothers. Everything else is a patchwork of attitude and scraps picked up from people in movies. Doesn't really know who he is yet. Doesn't feel entirely comfortable being himself. Consciously pretends to be other people, takes on their voices and mannerisms. Always ready with a joke, a fast joke, a quick joke, an easy joke. Not too afraid to have a in-depth conversation, though. Easy to talk to. A bit of a hothead, sometimes. A bit of a crybaby, a little oversensitive. And a bit of a puppy dog when it comes to girls. Hasn't quite figured out the whole thing yet. Really won't figure it out for years. At this point, it's just easy to get a crush on someone. Usually the wrong someone. Someone completely uninterested. And he's always a little mystified as to why they're not interested. From the outside, it's probably obvious. He's a dork. He's a nerd. He's a geek. He's a John Hughes, Ducky, Anthony Michael Hall, John Cusack and 16 Candles cliche dork. It's obvious. And he kind of suspects it. Walks around with his nose in a book, budding pretensions, sci-fi, fantasy, comic books. None of the stuff was cool back in the day. But that's who he is. That's who I was. It's a fairly accurate sketch of what I was like back in high school. A couple of weeks back, I had the opportunity to go and speak to a group of high school students and their parents at an award ceremony for a creative writing contest sponsored by a couple of my friends. In addition, I was one of the judges, and it was interesting to read all of the entries. It reminded me of some of the things I'd been writing around that age. And because I'm the kind of writer who never throws anything away, it was pretty easy to go back and dig out some of the things I'd written back then. I've still got most everything I've ever written. And it occurred to me that it might be interesting to share one of those pieces here on the show. Warts and all, I haven't changed a thing. I haven't rewritten anything. It seems unfair somehow to go back 25 years and look over that kid's shoulder and, you know, show him how to do it the right way. Besides, when it comes right down to it, I really haven't changed all that much in 25 years, and I'm not entirely certain I could do a better job of it now. I'm still that same tall, pale, gawky kid. I'm still guilty of overwriting things, of getting a little heavy-handed with my descriptions and imagery, and a little self-indulgent with my characters. And I suppose I'm still the kind of writer who gets a little fixated on a movie soundtrack and listens to it over and over again and eventually winds up plagiarizing one of the names off the track list and using it to title a short story, forcing it in there, whether it fits or not. In this case, the name of the story is Memories of Green. Sometimes I sit and wonder if any of it really happened. There's no one who would believe me if I told them anyway. I've tried, but no one listens. I've had a while to think about it, and the more I do, the more confused and unsure I become. I still, to this day, don't know what happened. Maybe it's for the best, if I never know for sure. This is what happened. The golden coin of the sun sank lower and lower past the horizon, spending away the last moments of the day. The castle on the hill was ablaze with light and full of music and laughter, to stronghold against the quickening night. Inside the stone walls there was light and music for all. Dancers flowed across the floor like flowers in the spring breeze. Nearby, teachers stood grim and watchful to guard against anyone having too much of the wrong kind of fun. There wasn't any danger of me having fun, wrong kind or not. My date, a real wench, left me very early in the evening to be with someone else. So I was on my own. Usually not my style, especially not tonight. Bored, tired, depressed, and lonely, I stood near the outer doors of the ballroom, just far enough away from all the wallflowers whose dates ran out on them, too. I wandered over to the punch bowl to see if there was anyone worth talking to. Not a chance. Looking around the ballroom at all the wall hangings, suits of armor, tapestries, and other medieval-type crap, I wondered for about the billionth time just who the hell had come up with the idea for an all-school, authentic medieval costume ball. All that night I'd been asking people who thought it up, but no one seemed to know. I wanted to find that jerk and teach him new meanings of the word pain. I turned to get myself some probably spiked punch when someone behind me said something to me. "What?" I asked. Then, quite intelligently, I turned around to see who it was. Standing before me was a black, strapless, low-cut, skin-tight, slit, short evening dress that was probably a violation of every dress code in existence. Barely inside the dress was the captain of the cheerleading squad. A very nice, well-rounded girl, but probably the biggest airhead in the universe. "What?" I asked again, still mired in my own thoughts. She looked me over and smiled. "I absolutely love your costume," she breathed. I was wearing an all-black costume, complete with cape, tunic, boots, gloves, the works. I was wearing a silver belt about my waist and a silver chain around my neck. It cost me big bucks to put together, but it was worth it. "Thanks," I said. Then my mind came to a screeching halt as my eyes realized what she was pretending to wear. "You look nice, too," I told her. Nice wasn't exactly the word I had in mind, but the one I was thinking of usually isn't considered flattering. She leaned forward and my mind started moving in about 17 directions inside my skull. I willed myself to lock eyes with her and swore to myself that I wasn't going to look anywhere else, no matter what. She didn't seem to realize what was happening because she moved as close as two people can be without breaking some major laws of physics and morality. "Do you really like my dress?" she asked innocently. "Yeah, right." "You can't begin to imagine how much," I said. The I was beginning to look up, I thought. She smiled, flashing her magical eyes, then said, "Isn't that your date out there?" "That's her, all right," I said. I followed her gaze to the dance floor where I saw my date dancing with some guy. They were in a clutch that looked like an advertisement for the early stages of lust. "Who's the goon she's with?" "You don't know?" the cheerleader asked. Once again, I was amazed at her breath control. Scuba divers could learn from her. Should I?" I asked. "Well," she began, "he's only the person who thought up this entire party." She bubbled. "You really should pay attention. He's so smart and everyone knows him." She started to go on about how great this jerk was, but I cut her off. "Him?" I shouted. A few teachers looked over, but I glared at them until they looked away. The cheerleader's morality, or lack thereof, was forgotten as I mentally prepared for kicking that guy's teeth in. "With my date," I muttered. "I don't believe it." "Forget about them," she said in a way that immediately drew my eyes back to hers. She flashed a smile that would probably have stopped a herd of stampeding rhinos. It was pretty intense. "Let's go outside," she suggested, sweetly. "Absolutely. Let's." I was totally under her spell, that is, until a form inserted itself between myself and the airhead. Our gazes shattered, and so did the spell. The form was my best friend. He had a date. Why was he bugging me? "Hey, hey, how the hell are you all doing?" he shouted. "Fine," I smiled like a shark. "Get the hell out of here." I glanced at the girl, hoping he would wise up and get the message. "Hey, come on, pal, there's a girl over here," he waved vaguely at the crowd, "who's dying to meet you. I've told her all about you." The idiot just stood there and smiled. "Great, wonderful, get lost." "What?" He glanced at the girl and slapped his forehead. "Oh, sorry, I didn't introduce myself." He extended his hand in her general direction. "Pleased to meet you." "Charmed," she growled. He turned back to me. She mouthed the words, "Get rid of him." I shrugged. I was doing my best. "So you want to meet this chick or not?" he asked me. I spoke slowly, enunciating every word so he would understand. "Look, listen, you psycho. If you don't get lost, I'm going to kill you. I'm already talking to a girl." He glanced past me. "Where? Who?" he asked, innocently. With dread in my heart, I looked around to see the girl walking off into the crowd. She cast a glance over her shoulder, gave me a glimpse of her magic smile, blew a kiss, and then she was gone. I turned back to my soon-to-be-dead friend. "Ready to meet God?" he laughed. "Face it, she's an airhead. Definitely not your type, pal." "Ever wonder what hell is like?" I grabbed him by the throat. "Any last words?" "Look, what about the girl I told you about?" he sputtered. I relaxed my grip. "What about her? Where is she?" "Well," he said slowly, "I lied." "What?" I shouted. The teachers looked over, but I ignored them. "I just said that to save you from that airhead cheerleader," he said quickly. "I didn't ask you to save me, did I? Did you ask if I wanted to be rescued?" "Well, I assumed." I dragged him to the doors and pulled him into the courtyard by his lapels. He started speaking faster. "Look, I was just trying to do you a favor. For all you know, you could have ended up with that airhead as a girlfriend. Then, in a year, you'd propose and get married. Is that what you want?" he asked me. "You want to end up stuck with her for the rest of your life?" "Yes!" I shouted. "Oh, sorry. Never mind. My mistake." I let go of his jacket and walked over to the stone railing of the courtyard. "Forget it. I would have done the same for you. It's cool. I looked out into the gardens of the castle, the paths glowing softly from lanterns. I felt lonely all of a sudden. Maybe. Well, he said, I better go find who my date's trying to pick up on. Have fun. He went back inside. The symphony of the night had begun. The silver eye of the moon gazed down upon the earth like a great conductor and his orchestra. The melodies of the cool night air flowed around me. They slid into my mind and numbed my soul. Below me, in the pathways, shadows moved like instruments of shadows, playing to the moon above. The lanterns that glowed among the pathways reflected the stars above. As I watched, a star fell, in liquid fire, to the earth below. Music drifted outside from the party. It flowed over me like a cool mist, like the night air. I closed my eyes. I could feel something in the air, something waiting, something lost. The hair on the back of my neck rose. Shivers scampered across my back. Someone was watching me. I snapped open my eyes and spun around. Standing behind me was the most beautiful girl I had ever seen. She had long auburn hair that flowed down her shoulders to a white linen and lace gown, tiny flashes around her throat and in her hair. Her deep green eyes flashed like the sea under the sun. She smiled shyly at being caught spying on me. Hello. Her voice moved like the night air. I just stood and looked at her without saying a word. I was overcome by some magic in her eyes or a song in her voice or hypnotized by the glimmers in her hair and eyes. Something in her eyes flashed as she smiled. Hello, she repeated. I blinked, realizing what an idiot I was being, and managed to say hi back. She smiled, a smile of warmth, but behind it was a touch of sadness. She walked over to the stone railing next to me and looked up at the stars. They are so beautiful, but so far away, she murmured, almost to herself. Yeah. I leaned next to her on the railing, but not too close. This wasn't some cheerleader trying to come on to me. There was something about her. I could feel it. She looked up across the endless sea overhead. I used to think that the stars are ghosts traveling to new places, she said. If you look long enough, you can see their faces, and if you listen, sometimes they speak. I nodded. If you look close. But you have to listen, she told me. You have to listen, too. I nodded again, unsure of all this. Who was this girl? They're going to a new place, she said. A place where everything is green. Sometimes they get lost, she said quietly. Sometimes, I echoed. We both looked up at the traveling ghosts in the sky. What's your name? She asked me. I realized we had been talking like old friends, but we didn't even know each other's names. I told her my name. She smiled a little, then said, My name is Karen. I nodded. Nice to meet you, Karen. She smiled and said, It's nice to meet you too. We stood there for a moment, just looking at each other. The stars and moon gave her a soft glow. It seemed like everything, the moon, the stars, the music, all of it, was there because of her. I asked her who she had come to the dance with. She frowned a bit, and her eyes showed a great deep sadness inside. No one, she told me. Why not? I asked. Do you have a date? Sharp girl, I thought. Sort of, I answered. Not really. She's inside with someone else. Oh, she said. In that moment, I knew she knew it all, my loneliness, my date leaving me, everything about me. We both paused, then smiled, then laughed like old friends. Would you like to go inside? I asked her. Yes. It seemed that the stars shone a little brighter then. I could hear them singing above. She put her arm in mine and we started towards the doors. Just outside them, she stopped. She smiled. Let's just stay out here, in the cool. Sure. We turned and walked from the party. After that, I no longer would be able to prevent what was to happen, even if I had known. I felt something inside me slowly coming alive as we talked. She asked me questions about where I was from, who I was, and other such things. We just walked along the garden paths under the glowing lanterns and talked together. We talked about everything, laughing and strolling together. I was slowly realizing how special this girl was. We stopped underneath a paper lantern that spun slowly in the cool breeze. She sat down on a stone bench, and I sat next to her. Together we looked up at the stars. She looked up at the wanderers in the sky above. For a long time she didn't say anything. Then she said, very, very softly, I think they talk about where they came from, where they're going. They talk about the green fields they left and the ones they're going to. They remember. Memories of green, I said. I looked from the stars to her, surprised to see tears on her cheeks. Karen, what's the matter? She leaned against me and I put my arms around her. She just sobbed. It sounded like her heart was breaking. She looked up at me and I could see the stars reflected in her tears. That's it. Memories of green. She turned her face down and started to softly cry again. It was almost more than I could bear to see such a beautiful girl this way. I almost cried myself. I whispered in her ear and told her how much she meant to me. She looked up at me and dried her tears on a corner of my cloak. She smiled like the moon. I looked down deep into her eyes. The misty air danced slowly around us. Time hung suspended in her eyes. I felt myself being drowned in deep, dark water. I softly touched her cheek. Her eyes seemed to grow larger and drew me in. Then, gently, forever, we kissed. I looked at her. Slowly she opened her eyes, then she smiled, and I had to smile too. I pulled her close and I could feel her hair against my cheek. Karen, I think I love you. I love you, she said. Then, above, from the castle, I heard shouts and laughter. The music was gone, and people were outside walking in the courtyard. The party's over, I said. There, under the moon, she and I kissed again. I took the silver chain from around my neck and put it on her. Just so you don't forget me. I won't ever forget you, she said softly. I took her arm and we started walking together up the stone stairs. She paused. What's wrong? I asked her. She shivered and looked at the stars. Her hand darted to my silver chain at her throat. Don't forget me, she said. Never, I told her. I'm never going to let you get away from me. Then a shout from above made me look up. My friend was waving down at me. I turned to Karen. She was standing a few feet away, her hand still grasping my chain. She looked at me. Goodbye, she said. What? I asked her.
I'll always love you. We'll meet again someday, she whispered.
Then my friend was next to me on the stairs.
Look, I'm really sorry about tonight, pal, he told me. I guess you were pretty lonesome by yourself, huh?
I turned to face Karen, but no one was there. I looked around for her. Suddenly, I felt a great loss inside of me, as if someone had taken away my heart and left a space where it had been.
What's the matter? My friend asked me. Did you see where she went? I asked him, slowly feeling the panic in me.
Who?
He gave me an odd look.
Karen, the girl I was standing with, I said.
What?
He backed up a little. I looked over the railings to the stone paths below, but she wasn't there. She was gone. My friend had stepped back a few paces from me with a strange look on his face. He said my name like he didn't know who I was. I called for her, but she didn't answer. I looked all around, but she was gone. Then the stars above flashed like her eyes, and it seemed like I heard her voice somewhere inside me.
Don't forget me, Karen, I said softly.
You were alone when I got here, my friend told me. I stood there and felt the mist wrap around me. She was gone, but not forgotten. I could still hear her silver voice and smell the scent of her hair, and her laughter echoed through my mind. Her kiss lingered on my soul. So no one believes me when I tell them my story. No one listens. Not that I blame them. Sometimes I'm not sure myself. When I get doubts, I go out and look at the stars until the doubts fade away. She said I'd see her again. I don't know when that'll be. I wonder if she'll be waiting for me when I follow her. I'm older now. I first met her long ago. Maybe tomorrow she'll wake me up. My time here is nearly done. I know soon I'll make that same trip across the sky. I'm pretty sure Karen will be there, waiting for me. All my life, people have asked me why I look at the sky so much, what I think about when I walk at night. I just smile and say, memories of green.
Reading over this story again, I'm struck by how many of these themes still show up in my work. There's definitely some echoes I think you can trace back. And it was interesting to notice that there's at least one line that I stole for a story much later. In fact, it's a story I've read here on this show. At any rate, that's our show. Thanks very much for listening. I appreciate it, and I'm sure that kid way back in 1987 appreciates it too. I'll be back in the next episode on my own with something new. Until then, thanks very much. Take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you soon.